As we navigate into 2024, the emphasis on cyber resilience is becoming paramount. In this episode, Christian sheds light on this ever-evolving landscape and the importance of zero trust frameworks. This is not just about tools, it's a mindset, a holistic approach about security. And in this conversation, we'll delve into these changing dynamics, from the cozy confines of the internal network to the sprawling landscape of software as a service. Christian Moan, our new member, brings his perspective as a chief technologist and shows how we need to break down traditional barriers and reimagine security in this age of interconnectedness. Zero trust isn't just a buzzword, it's a call to action for all of us. Welcome to this episode. Slightly unusual episode this time. Firstly, as we're now in 2024, we're going to do our pick of the technology trends for this year. So each of our podcast members will be running through what they feel is going to be exciting in the coming year. But before I do that, I'd like to introduce our new member, Christian Moan. And I'll let you introduce yourself rather than trying to go into your background. Tell us about yourself.
I thought you should do a description of who I am.
I can make it up. I can definitely make it up. Yeah.
That's probably as good as I could do. My kind of title is Chief Technologist for Software-Defined Data Centers in Norway, which is basically a fancy pre-sales, pretty much. And I also lead our team of VMware specialists technology-wise in Norway. So, and that's pretty much the short of it. I've been a consultant. I've been a customer. I've been all around the place. I've been doing this for a while. So, yeah, thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, well, quite welcome. And of course, we still have Christian Lehrer with us. So, welcome to 2024, Christian.
Welcome, Tony. Great that you are with us here also.
I think we need to, shall I just change my name to Christian? It'll just make life easier, won't it, really?
Easier. That would be way easier.
The three Christians. Is that a pop group or a religion? I'm not sure, to be honest. It could be either.
Neither one sounds good. I'm not sure that's a good thing in any regard.
No, probably not.
Would be easier to deduplicate everything with everyone the same name, though. But yeah,
that's very true. Might be. And Christian said this, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I could get away with anything. So really, our idea for this week was 2024. Obviously, a lot of change in the IT industry. Moving into 2024, certainly 2023 was a huge year, specifically for AI and other trends of that nature, and generative AI in particular. But let's go through and figure out what you've picked as your expectations for 2024 from a technology perspective. Shall we start with you, Christian Lehrer?
Well, then we can do. But I might have a little bit of a boring topic for some listeners. But I think it's still very, very important, and it will continue to be very important throughout the year. I'm talking about cyber resiliency. And what do I mean with that? It's not only the technical IT security, but it's more the holistic part of IT security and security in general. So we're getting and seeing more and more adoption of the Zero Trust framework, for example, which I really, really like, because more and more people are seeing that it's not only about putting a tool somewhere in between in the infrastructure and then everything is safe. It's absolutely not that. It's a way of thinking about security, thinking about implementing new systems. And I think we will see that trend going forward.
Are we not zero trusting anyway, though? Because at the end of the day, zero trust has been around for years. So why is it different now? Is that because software is becoming more and more limited, and therefore it can't expand beyond boundaries?
No, I think more and more people are thinking about it when implementing new systems and new solutions, and therefore demanding more zero trust principles to be implemented in software, in new solutions, to be able to fulfill that goal of checking every access and least privilege and so on and so on. And I think that is what changed throughout the years. The idea is pretty old nowadays, but we are now in that phase where it's not only the early adopters, we're now in the, how do you say, there's this trending curve for new things. And I think we are now in that upwards thing where everybody is getting it. And that's very positive. But Christian, you are nodding here. What's your take on that?
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, right? It's I mean, the zero trust thing is, it's in and of itself, it's a pretty basic concept. So but it's taken a lot of time for people to actually embrace it and start using it and figuring out how they can actually implement that. There's a combination of things there. There's a combination of the market, the products, and the services we use are mature enough that we can actually start using a zero trust principle with them, as well as people kind of getting their heads around the concept of it. And those things take time. I mean, it's a long tail, these things. I mean, the hype cycle is one thing, but the long tail of it on the end of it is where it really gets interesting, because that's where we actually start implementing it. And it's about time we do that across the board.
I think it's about the reason that we originally started with computer systems that were zero trust. It would be a situation whereby one person would have responsibility to do one thing, and that would be their one thing, nothing else. We then went to a process whereby that was unworkable. We didn't have these large organizations with many hundreds of people all doing very similar jobs, but at different tiers. So we went to a model whereby it was much easier for people to do things because administration demanded it. So for example, like, we went from one person in the business being an AD admin to loads of people, all the IT team being AD admins, because if they want, they all need to administer, they're all generalists. They all need to administer everything. So are we going to go back to the sort of situation whereby there's so few people who are admins now? Or is it just about logging the changes so that we can see them better?
It's a combination of both. The most impressive picture I have when I think about zero trust and why we need it is, in the past, we had our computer networks, which were by default secure behind our company firewall. We made that distinction between inside and outside. Outside world was bad and evil and I love you warm and so on. Internally, cozy, some guitar music in the background, everything was fine. And with the advent of software as a service, Office 365, Dropbox, and so on, we are using more and more infrastructure that is not in our realm. We are not responsible for it, but we have to make sure from an organizational standpoint that people can use it. And there we are putting more and more holes into our firewall, into our walled garden that is just protecting us from the outside. And so when I think about zero trust, it's as easy as, take that firewall out. There, just use everything as if there was never any distinction between inside and outside. And when you do that and you put that in every thought about a new system, about a new implementation, about an upgrade, about any change, you always will find small things that can help you to secure your environment a little bit more. And I think that's what zero trust is all about. Think about it all the time and not take anything as a given. Make sure that whenever you do a change, you have that in mind. Then you will take up step by step by step. And that's what Christian is saying. It takes a long time until you have kind of rebuilt everything or repurposed and whatever. And there's a natural cycle, so to say, on hardware and systems where they normally fall out of support or whatever. And latest, that is the point where you have to think about, am I replacing the VMware cluster the same way I did last time? Or maybe I'm decoupling AD administration and VMware administration, for example.
Yes, please do that always, every time. Exactly. I can go on a rant for an hour about that because...
You're allowed. It's okay.
The example there is you use Active Directory for single sign-on. That's great. It's comfy. I mean, you can log on with whatever you are. You get sure that you get the access you need. But then something happens. I mean, as you mentioned, the firewalls and blocking traffic and all of that stuff, the threats that we see today happen in allowed traffic. I mean, every single threat that comes into your data center has gone through an allowed list. You have allowed that access. So if you don't do anything on the back end of that, the door is wide open once you're inside, right? So And that's one of the things with the VMware vCenter and Active Directory integration, right? So once someone's on the inside and they start moving laterally through your network and expanding their access and finding passwords somewhere and escalating their access tokens, all of a sudden they have full access to your VMware environment as well, which is basically probably 90% of your whole data center estate.
Yeah, and not just your VMware environment, also your network, also your backup systems, also everything else that they want
exactly.
to attack.
Exactly. So just by doing a kind of simple thing, like we are not using AD as a single sign-on, or we're using a separate AD for a management network that is totally isolated from everything else, and then you can use single sign-on still because you can't escalate from an ordinary reception user or whatever into becoming a VMware and Active Directory admin because they're totally isolated from each other. So while it's comfy and useful and nice to have, it's probably not a good idea looking at today's threat environment, right? So decouple those things.
And this is it.
It makes the footprint.
And we used to do it, didn't we? Yep. We used to have separate backup networks, separate storage array networks, yep. Separate. All of these things were separate elements. But for convenience, yep. We put them all together. And Active mm-hmm. Directory became the standard login process for all those things. But I think, but like you say, that breaks the security process, but it does so for simplicity. So aren't we adding in additional complexity by then putting in this zero trust element? Jobs are going to take a lot longer to do from the point of view that, oh, you've got to log out of this user and log in as this user to do this job, and then log out of that user and log in as a different user to do a different job. So you're going to be in and out all the time trying to do that. Or are there mechanisms now to make that process much simpler?
I think it's a combination, or it can be both. Depends on the maturity of your organization. We see in large organizations especially that we have more and more automation doing things. And that is not only on a good thing on the security side, it's also a good thing on the change and understanding change side. So if you automate things, you have to make your thoughts about what should be done. What is the goal of any request or change or anything? And then you have to decide which steps to take. And if you take a look at each of those steps and automate that, it's way easier to do the different steps with different accounts in those different environments than doing it manually. Because as you said, then you would have to change for the XAN, for the VMware, for AD, terminal server, Citrix, whatever. And when you have an automation solution, which of course has to be secured properly, monitored, and logged, and so on.
You don't want your username and passwords in scripts being run through
exactly.
the system.
We don't want that. No. But that can be a chance, and this is also what I say all the time to customers. You have to understand how your environment is working, how your processes are working, and then zero trust can be a chance for you to not only get it more secure, but also get it more streamlined, get more up to speed with your requests, and then overall get the admins to do more interesting stuff than just creating new folder structures for the new business project or creating a new VM manually by using a template and changing the name by typing in something else.
Do more automation.
Can be automated.
Yeah, exactly. Spend more time doing that than manually doing the jobs.
Yeah, and that also gives you the added benefit of something that's overlooked often. You actually get a documented process of how things are done.
Absolutely.
So by automating things, you're basically documenting how the business is run on the IT side of things.
That's crazy talk. You're not allowed to do documentation. You work in IT for a living.
Yeah, exactly.
And the next part is, if you know how to do it, you can monitor abbreviations of that way easier. A logging system has its base of things how anything is done on a typical way. And when suddenly a VM is created in a completely different way, that might be an alarming signal. Or some access is being given in an untypical way or something like that. That might be a trigger for your security team to say, oh, strange, let's take a look at it. And most of the time, it's totally benign. Somebody's trying a new script or anything, but at least your security team can take a look. They can clarify and then tell the admin, hey, if you're doing such things, please let us know before. or use that in that way because there is a documented way to do things.
So that's a cyber resilience. I mean, you started with cyber resiliency. So this is a zero trust part of it. There's got to be more to it than that. I mean, in my mind, resiliency is the kind of the ability to withstand something happening, right? So that also broadens into backups, restores, how you can get back from an incident, because it's going to happen still. I mean, these incidents are still going to happen. We can't eliminate them with zero trust.
That's absolutely true.
It gives us better control when they happen, or makes it harder for the bad actor to be able to gain access to the things that they want to.
We spot them earlier. So it starts with awareness. We have to train our users. There a lot of companies are doing that in a very good way now, but there are still many companies not training their people on how to react on security things or even spot changes or maybe a strange call that could be leading to some social engineering over through the technical part and then doing the backup stuff, but also having your major incident plan ready. You have to know how to react in such case of a large incident. Whom have I to contact? Do I have some official organizations that I have to take in? Who to contact for that rebuild and so on? And that all falls under that cyber resiliency.
We haven't really done it, have we? I mean, I wrote a white paper and a PDF about this for our internal teams a while ago. The businesses tend to work out their DR plan about what they're going to do in the event of a disaster. Generally speaking, certainly years ago, that was related more to fire and flood than it was to ransomware. But businesses, I think, I wonder how many businesses out there are actually spending their time writing a ransomware plan, where they literally, which police number do I call? What's the name? What's the number of my insurance company? What's the number of my the IT teams who are going to help me in the event that I'm taken, because in reality they won't have access to the email system that'll be locked down. They won't have access to everything that they utilize on their computers. They may not be able to get to. So does their mobile phone have all the numbers on? You know, are there individual members of the team that are better suited to solving certain problems? All of these sort of things they've got to think about beforehand. And I wonder if that's one of the reasons that ransomware is so strong at punishing people, because they're not ready in the event that they get attacked. Because it's always, oh, well, it's not going to be me.
A few years ago, or many years ago now, I worked for a shipping company, right? So I was a network manager for a shipping company. We had a 20-something ships running around the world at all times, chemical tankers. And they had, the shipping company themselves had a contingency plan. If something happened with one of the ships, an accident, whatever, they knew how they should act in that kind of, in that scenario, right? So if something happens, they would commence the war room and get people in. Someone would talk to the press. Someone would handle the officers. Someone would handle the ship management, the hardware part of things. All of those things were clearly laid out in a plan. So what's the difference? I mean, if something physically happens to a ship or something happens to your IT infrastructure, it's kind of the same thing, right? But we don't have those contingency plans for what happens in many organizations today, because they might have it for physical things. What happens if the building burns down? But the effect of a ransomware attack is basically the same thing as your building burning down.
And this is it. And they're encouraging it more with legislation as well these days. DORA, things of that nature are pushing us towards DR. We've got to think about DR. We've got to think about resilience. We've got to think about all these sort of things. But again, I agree. I'm not sure how many businesses actually do it with regard to ransomware. But actually, there's probably loads that they can do to assist themselves. And it focuses the business, I tend to think. I don't know quite how we ended up on ransomware again from this angle.
Cyber resiliency.
It's a trend.
Trending topic.
But yeah, it's like I always tend to think that people or businesses think that IT or that ransomware is an IT problem. Therefore, IT's got to solve it. But actually, no, because it's not an IT problem. It's not caused by IT. It can, to a certain extent, be protected by IT, but really, that's got to be with the entire buy-in from the business, both financial, economic, understanding-wise, you know, expecting the fact that they're going to be hit, not expecting that they'll be immune, removing the blame culture in the event that it happens. All of these things are really tough. And I think, you know, businesses need to look at this from a complete business perspective.
Before it happens. And the great thing is, once you have such a plan, you can do dry runs.
Yeah.
It's not that hard. You can do dry runs. You can even put some kind of Dungeons and Dragons style pen and paper module, make it fun. And with every dry run, you will learn new things that will help you increase your confidence in the extreme events.
So what, a level 15 wizard attacks your IT system? I mean, I'm with a magic missile. I mean, I'm kind of interested already. This would be great.
Yeah, for example, you could jeopardize how skilled the attacker is, right? Mm. There are different types of attackers. Is it some kind of script kiddie who might be blocked by the first firewall, or is it some kind of nation state, or at least a professional ransomware gang? That could be jeopardized, for example. Yeah. And one time it could be a very easy solvable. Everyone has a laugh and everything is fine. And the next time it could be way harder. So there's a possibility to make it interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Just don't have bards. I mean, quite what a guy with a lute's going to do in that situation, I'm not sure, to be honest. But, you know, maybe, you know, that it's just always a bit odd. That. Maybe.
Don't diss the fact that comic relief might help.
And part of that, there's one very, very important tip. One thing that always has to be in your major incident plan: who is paying the pizza? Because there's nothing worse than people working hungry in a stressful situation. So that is very, very important.
Who is paying? Which pizza? You can actually plan in which pizza house you're going to use. Maybe what size of pizza,
you can
depending
do anything
on the workforce,
yes,
required. You know,
but this... it's not a joke. This relieves pressure in this extreme moment, because when that happens, everybody is on fire. And everything that is planned out and laid out, and somebody only has to do step 1, 2, 3, they don't have to think about it and they can focus on the other topics. And that is so important.
Do we have to define whether pineapple is allowed at the start of this process? You know,
that's a part of the resiliency plan.
It is. Pineapple acceptance. That's sort of stuff.
So you can do that. And you can also have a pre-made order list with the local pizzeria.
That's right.
So you just call them, okay, it's hit the fan, send the pizza.
That's right, it's hit the fan.
That's step
that
one.
That could be next level.
What level is it? It's meat feast level, that sort of stuff. You know, it's, we're in serious trouble, people.
But so that's all part of that cyber resilience thing. And I know it's a long-standing topic, and it will be long-standing for a lot of years coming in. But I see more and more companies getting more close to it, closer to the bottom of the topic itself, and that for... getting better and better in security.
Yeah.
So don't think that's something that will be solved in 2024.
No, absolutely not.
I'd like to buy one cyber resiliency, please. Can you install it?
Now, you can do that with insurance, can't you?
That.
I'm not sure the insurance company would agree, but yes. Okay, but I suppose my point still stands, the fact that I completely agree with all of that. I think the end of the day, we are at a situation whereby the only way to protect ourselves from these sort of things is to isolate, is to silo essentially the administration for the individual systems, which is what we've been working against for many years. We've been working deliberately to try and make it simple to administer our systems. So I suppose for the large organizations, that makes a lot of sense and is definitely the way forward. What about smaller organizations, though, whereby they have generalists, maybe let's say a 500-user business, but maybe they've got, seven or eight guys working in their IT systems? You know, they've maybe got two guys who know a bit about the network, two guys who know a bit about the VMware, five guys who run around doing desktops. Well, these generalists, is it more difficult for them to be, zero trusted?
They will have more accounts than in a larger organization where it's more specialized. But in general, the same principles can be used. And the cool thing about Zero Trust is oftentimes it's not a money thing. It's more an organizational thing. So going back to AD, it doesn't cost anything to set up domain tiering. In Asterisk, yeah, you will maybe have a second device or something like that, but there's no large infrastructure cost. For example, you can slim it down for general, for small organizations. At least you have to think about it. You have to think about it, and you can think about it in a smaller organization. And if you have to, because of convenience, or you're only really one person doing all the jobs, that also sometimes happen, at least please two-factor your admin accounts, for example, so that if somebody gets a hold of your account, you can at least protect it with the second factor. At least such things are really, really important. But I talk about it every time because I think it's really, really that important.
Yeah, as well as separating your normal user account with your admin account,
absolutely.
Right? Don't use the same account for everything. That's a simple first step, which helps.
Moving forward then, Christian, do you want to go first with regards to sort of how you think the businesses should be tackling this in 2024?
Think about your security and make it a holistic system. Don't only focus on single solutions. Think about all your environment and how to withstand attacks in general.
Yep. Christian?
Yeah, I agree. It's start small. Start with something. Start at some point. Start digging through your existing infrastructure and start securing it point by point and look at item for item or infrastructure for infrastructure or application for application. You don't have to bite over everything at once, but you have to start somewhere. Start somewhere small, get a success, get some confidence in how you do this, move on to the next one. It's an iterative process. It's not a one thing. We don't turn on Zero Trust for everything at once. You have to do it in iterations and start small.
And put it as part of your change management process as well, I guess, on that basis. So when you change something, make sure that you've considered the security elements as part of that change at a Zero Trust level. I suppose my point would be I think this is definitely somewhere we should go. I mean, we've talked about it previously with regard to our backup stuff, with regard to the fact that isolation of individual environments, siloing is the way forward. It provides better security, it provides more air gaps for attack. But I think the key thing that you said earlier, Christian, is automation is the key. So if you in an environment where you're thinking, I can't have 15 separate accounts doing all this sort of stuff, try adopting automation instead. You'll still have your multiple accounts, but you won't have all the headache of having to try and jump between them all the time. Get automation to do that. And any size business can do that.
But don't put your usernames in scripts.
And don't put your username and passwords in scripts.
Passwords,
don't do that. Don't do that.